When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento. Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, what's up? It's Friday. Why are we doing this show? Well, remember last month, Kaplan, how's it going?
Good. I got to do more work. What's going on? Why are we doing this?
I know. Two shows this week. Because remember last month, we did that show, Andrea Jones-Roy, Heaton, you, myself, our monthly roundtable for the world's smartest podcast network. Well, it's been a month. So this is our second roundtable. It's the time. It's that time of the month again to do the show. So we're back, baby. The World's Smartest Podcast Network in the past month. We now have a website. Go to worldsmartestpodcastnetwork.com. Subscribe to, you're already subscribed to our show. That's why you're listening. If you're not, I guess subscribe, but subscribe to their shows. Andrew Heaton has The Political Orphanage. Andrea Jones-Roy has Ask a Political Scientist. Those are podcasts. Andrea's is also a video podcast on YouTube. And, we're all back. What do you think, Heaton? Kaplan, it's been a good month.
You're replacing me already. I see what's going on here. This is what's going to happen. I'm going to be off Lost in America soon. But yeah, it's been the month flew by. Presidential election is still is going to be wrapping up soon. And so we thought I was just talking about what we're going to talk about or whatever.
No, because we're gonna do that in a minute. Let's just say you're in for a surprise. How about
it's a
that?
Surprise. We're gonna change. We're gonna move the topic a little bit. So do some fun stuff.
We're going to be talking about politics. We're going to be talking about the election, but not in the way you expect. How about
yes,
that?
So
everybody subscribe to, if you're a fan of their show, subscribe to our show. If you're a fan of our show, subscribe to their shows. What I like about the network, let's talk about the network for a minute. I've said this, I don't know if I've said this on the air, but I've said this in conversation. I think I've said it online, is that if you're talking about the world of political comedy, I don't think we necessarily fit into political comedy. We're more current events worldwide.
We had no home before this. We were political nomads, sort of.
Nomads, yeah. And we're nonpartisan by nature because we're not even talking about American politics. So most of our, we don't even know what the two sides are around the world. But then we're fitting it. So Andrew Heaton, he's given you nonpartisan. He had on Howie Mandel. I don't know.
Howard Hawkins, the Green Party candidate. He had on Joe Jurgensen, I believe, the Libertarian.
Yeah, he had on that lady.
That lady.
I thought was a guy until like 3 days ago. So yeah, he had both of them on recently. So he's given you American politics, but from a different angle. Andrea Jones-Roy's just giving you statistics. So you're like, if your question is, why do Latino voters in Florida, why are they Republicans? Guess what? She's going to tell you. She dives into all the statistics of all that. So all of this is nonpartisan. All of it's fun. All of it's a way to learn without getting preached to. I don't think anyone on our network does that. So that's it. Should we just get to the show?
It's a smarter show. It's going to make you smarter. A smarter podcast experience.
There we go. Let's play it.
Play the show.
All right, so we're back. What's up, everybody? We're talking about propositions today, because here's the thing. Heaton, Andrea, Kaplan, nobody wants to hear about what our opinions are on president. You know, everyone, the network that or the provider that puts out our podcast, Lost in America, with Kaplan and I, they sent us a thing a couple weeks ago saying, hey, is it okay? We want you to encourage your listeners to vote. And so we can make it, we can help you make an ad campaign, and we can drop an ad in the middle of your episode telling everyone to vote. And Kaplan and I came to this conclusion that, like, if you don't know there's an election and you need the two of us to tell you on our dumb podcast, you shouldn't be voting.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go forward a little bit more. I think if you are actively listening to multiple political podcasts, you're probably inclined to vote. You might even do it more than you should. You're more likely to commit voter fraud than not vote if you're listening to all.
Yeah, you're gonna go vote in all the states you've ever been registered in, because you can, but don't, but you could.
Mm-hmm. You could? Oh, voter fraud is real.
Well, wait, what? Because I'm having a lot of trouble
now. I just sank the voter fraud argument. You don't unregister. You're supposed to unregister when you move. And I have never done that. And I have voted in Connecticut, Michigan, and New York.
At the same time?
So I assume I could vote in Michigan. I have not.
Citizens arrest.
Yeah.
I wish I knew that, because I am having so much trouble. I had made my abortive trip to California and then went, oh no, this is a bad call. And so I left, and I was like, well, I'm not going to register to vote here, because then they might tax me, and I don't want that. I see no reason to pay California taxes this year. So went to Oklahoma and was like, all right, this makes sense. Parents live here. Like, some of my stuff's in storage here. I guess this is where I live. Okay. And registered. But then, like, my name got reversed. So for like a month, the voting commission thought I was Heaton Andrew and couldn't find me in the system. We finally figured it out, and I've requested the mail-in ballot, and I haven't received it yet. And so, like, it would be nice if I had a backup option, Andrea. If I was like, well, I guess I'll slum it in Texas. I'm still registered in Travis County, because I've heard every single day from multiple Democrats in Travis County that call me up.
Well, here's the thing. This is a perfect podcast for people who are voting in multiple states.
Yeah, that's
right. Because what we're going to give you today is all the propositions that we've found around the nation that you should care about, that you should be voting on. And if you can't vote in many states, fly around. Vote from state to state on election day.
Even a regional road trip. I think we've got some regional centrality in a few of these.
Because, we don't want to give people opinions on the presidential election, but we do want to give you opinions. We want to put our brain into your brain and tell you how to think about these propositions.
That's right.
And I'll add to that, too. I think that we pay so much attention to presidential elections. Like voting drops precipitously when there's not a president on the ballot. Midterms
it's
always
like
do less
lower
than
in some cases.
The
Yeah.
And if you were to do like just referendums and ballot initiatives outside of a presidential election, very few people would vote for them. And these things are the things that actually kind of really directly affect you. Like the folks that you're voting for the state legislature and the city council, the people that can irritate you the most, not the people that can like threaten the economy in a vague, distant way, or like give you night terrors, right? The people that can put speed bumps in front of your house or like zone away a liquor store, those people are all local. And so it's worth paying attention to these
ballot
initiatives.
And a lot of those, so I voted this morning in New York, no big deal, and there were very few.
Where's your sticker?
Andrea is
sticker?
A hero.
I don't see it.
I have a pen here. The lady, the weirdest thing that anyone has ever said to me happened today. I signed my thing to get the ballot, and she looked at my signature and she said, "You should learn how to finger paint." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And she was like, "Yeah, you could finger paint all around your signature."
She was trying to see if you're committing voter fraud.
I don't feel good about this. Yeah. But there were no like super local. I was expecting hyper local initiatives like what you're describing. And apparently all those were over the summer and spring in New York. And I totally missed those. So
I ask you a question since you brought it up. Why do we do the signature method? Is that our entire defense against voter frauds? We can't do IDs. So it's just like your signature matches. Because I mean, you can see the thing. You can look at people. If you're a good handwriting person, you could copy someone's signature enough to pass that test.
Yeah.
I mean,
where it is pretty safe is mail-in voting is very safe. It's very difficult to fabricate that. 30 of the states have computers that analyze your signature on your card and on your ballot. And on top of that, I think all of them do this. They, or at least most of them, have a serial number specific to you that is the ballot, which means that it would be very, very difficult to actually counterfeit a ballot and do it. So mail-in voting is very secure. It's also incredibly error-prone. Like, the error rate is so much higher than all other forms of voting that it has all sorts of problems, but fraud's probably not one of them. But yeah, for the other stuff, though, I think on the ground, yes, I think you're right, Kaplan. You just kind of walk in, and it's more or less the honor system. And then they look at your signature, maybe. But if you just walk in and, you know, I'm like, if I'd been in New York, I would have claimed to be Andrea.
You can do
that
the
way
Andrew.
I could have voted,
you can
and then
sign
it would have also irritated her.
Andrea is very similar.
Yeah. And, so and you, the key thing really is that a New York vote in the presidential election is really going to be what shifts it. So it's
well, that's
really,
you know,
that's true. Yes, that's
I'm from
exactly
Pennsylvania
right.
originally, and I've never voted in Pennsylvania because I don't want my vote to matter. I'm the opposite of everyone.
too much pressure.
Exactly. I'd rather be a front runner. I jump on who's going to win either way.
Yeah,
and I vote for them in either California or New York, the only states I've ever voted in. So much better.
You want to have zero impact and be a
bandwagon fan.
Of like,
I'm a bandwagon voter.
Excited non-swing.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yes.
I like this. This is also the most honest American voter
like
I've ever met.
Your vote matters, not your because
I
feel like
I vote for the winner in every election this way. I always
Caps undefeated.
Well, I didn't vote for Trump actually, but other than that one, I went Gary Johnson though. So.
In the 90s, Kaplan's favorite sports teams were the Chicago Bulls, the Yankees,
Cowboys, you know.
Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Yeah. So, hey, but
so should we get to these? Should we start going through these propositions?
Yeah, let's do this.
Yeah.
Let's go one. Everyone does one each, and then we'll do a second round of one each. How about that?
And we'll go back around. Yeah.
That sounds good. Yeah.
We'll keep going. Snake draft. Who wants to go first? Heaton, do you want to start us off?
You know what? Okay, mine's gonna get like dry. Can I make a request? Andrea's has
let's
wolves.
Start with the wolves.
Can we kick it off with wolves? I want to hear about that.
So I'm excited about this one. This is Colorado Proposition 114, the Gray Wolf Reintroduction Initiative. It's the first of its kind, which I think is the first time that a popular vote has ever voted on wolf reintroduction. Wolf reintroduction has been done before, but this is the first time it's a popular vote. And basically the idea is Colorado wants to take a whole bunch of wolves and put them in the western half of the state. And apparently they used to be there and Americans/humans killed them all like 100 years ago or something like that. And the idea is that it will restore the ecological system and cause a better balance between, I'm not a biologist, so I'm not totally sure of the details, but it basically will keep like the grazing animals from grazing too much and it will keep some other crap from getting fucked up. And so we'll have these wolves. But the problem is that people,
Dr. Andrea Jones-Roy.
People don't like it. People who don't like it. It has a lot of popular support, but the people who don't like it are like farmers, for example, who say that the wolves will come and like eat their bison or cows, whatever they grow.
You're also not a farmer?
Yeah, also not a farmer. And so one of the big criticisms.
Colorado bison industries. Those good bison.
Yes.
Another win for China.
I have a lot to say about this. Very informed opinions. Yeah. So basically, it's a rural versus urban divide a bit, where a bunch of urban people who care about the environment are like, yeah, more wolves. Of course, wolves are awesome. But people who actually live in the area and are trying to make a living are like, actually, we'd prefer to not be swarmed by wolves. So that's what's up for vote.
Can I go?
Yes.
I think that's actually a great description of that breakdown, Andrea. Like, I think you nailed it. Because it's people that are pro-environment, but also, like, wolves do tend to eat cattle. Like, they do go after calves. Like, so you are directly affecting the livelihood of the people that will be dealing with it.
Don't they only eat cattle if they're in packs? Is that...
I don't know. I think they, I would not surprise me if they go after calves.
No, I mean, they're in a pack, like a pack of wolves.
Right. Well,
so
I think
you
they're
going to
introduce more than one. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Just, one in a time,
so wait,
one
wait, so
introduction. Square,
Or only release like introvertive wolves that don't like cooperating with other wolves. And then they'll like
or
go after squirrels and stuff.
In some
I think that's a good
states,
idea.
You can have a dog that's like up to a quarter wolf. Maybe just like four of those. Would that do it? I don't know. What were you going to say?
Yeah. I think we release them in the suburbs as well.
There we go.
And so it's a
terrorized
a level playing field for everybody. And honestly, then we'll see how, you know,
I think that's the most equitable solution.
Like, I'm voting for it, but not if it's in my backyard. So let's put it in your backyard. Trump says there's a war on the suburbs.
What about
let's
the city?
Real,
what about Denver? Yeah, exactly. Let's release the streets to Denver.
Let's up to this morning I was reading about how New York is swarmed with rats, and the rats are more aggressive than ever because the rest
they're angry. There's no people. They're pissed off.
I would happily fill Lower Manhattan with wolves. It would make everyone better off.
Yeah. But would dogs?
They would eat the rats. I can't think it would make the smell any worse.
I'd rather look at wolves than pigeons.
I'm all in favor of this.
But I guess put them back in hotels. I don't want to get into that right now. But that's the one.
Is available.
Well, it is one of the great dogs came from wolves, right? That's where they and there's like not a, there's like a billion dogs in this world because everyone loves dogs. With the dogs, would dogs and wolves get along though? Like, are they gonna like?
No,
I doubt it.
Because they're the same DNA, though.
I don't think that's a problem.
If a wolf eats somebody's dog in front of a lion,
I don't think it would go well.
So you're saying my little dog Pancakes, who's a little Maltese Yorkie mix, and is very aggressive to big those dogs that kind of look like wolves. She's always like barking at them, attacking them. Uh-huh. So if she sees an actual wolf and she does that, that dog's gonna eat her.
Yes,
I think.
Yeah,
that
so I'm out on this proposal.
Yes,
I think it's a virtual certainty.
Conversely. I am very I love trees and I love dogs. And so if there's an initiative in front of me that's like plant some trees or help the canine greater species, all in favor of it. I think they should crank them out. I like it. I'm sorry about the farmers, and I'm related to a bunch of farmers, and so I might hear about this. I don't know, maybe we'll come up with some kind of like state wolf insurance policy.
Oh,
I don't know. I like wolves.
You
got to
get it
I'm
if you're a farmer. Everyone's got wolves
insurance. by all states.
Yeah. That's the new Game of Thrones season that comes out afterwards where all the Starks just get wolf insurance in the end. What was I going to say? Oh, the one comparison everyone's making is to Yellowstone, which did this like 25 years ago. And apparently the debate was more or less the same. And everyone in Colorado now is pointing to Yellowstone and saying it was generally quite good. For the environment. But then other people are like, but Colorado, by the way, is different from Yellowstone. And more people are trying to make a
good argument.
That's the argument. Yeah.
It's a different state.
Andrea, did you say that they're introducing them
to
Western Colorado?
Yeah, it's just the Western
Colorado?
Side, like past the mountains. Yeah.
Western
so if you don't like it, go east.
Because the Colorado part of Colorado that's basically Kansas is in the east. That's where the cattle is, and that's where the farming is. So if you're doing it in the mountains, that seems to me you just have cooler mountains.
It's designated lands west of the Continental Divide by the end of 2023. So we got a few years to warm up to this as well.
Your Coors Light's going to taste like wolves, but you know.
It's going to have little hairs in it.
Other possibility, and this is going to sound crazy, but I swear this is a real thing. There are guard donkeys. They're miniature donkeys, and they are bred to fight coyotes. We have them in Oklahoma. They you'll get like
what do they
one
do?
Donkey
they kick?
Per every.
Like, how do they fight
the
him? They just
have
like a big boot.
Yeah. No, they kick and headbutt, and they're very aggressive, and like because coyotes will take out a calf. Coyotes are like coward wolves. Like coyotes.
Oh, yeah,
are
I know
like
coyotes
really skinny
eat dogs.
Coward
that
wolves.
I know. No.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, and so they you can get these donkeys. So like, maybe double down
on
donkeys.
Invest now in defensive miniature donkeys.
Big,
I think, is the takeaway.
All of this sounds like a commercial that will work its way into my program eventually. Even though it's all
big donkey
accurate.
Will be in support of this. Good to know. They're one of the lobbyists.
So what do we have? We've got Cap. You're against it. Heat and Turner.
I'm against it because I'm pro little dog.
I'm for it only if it eats Kaplan's dog.
Okay.
My dog would definitely, that's how she's going to go out. She's going to pick a fight with either one of those rats you were talking about and it's going to take her down or a wolf once they introduce it to me. And we know Joe Biden's for it because he wants to destroy the suburbs. So we're putting him on a list.
That's right. I'm for it
if we can put it in downtown Denver, as you said, and it can, you know, a wolf versus hippie battle is what I want to see.
Yeah. Can we give wolves a bunch of edibles and see what happens? That will happen in Denver, right?
Well, I'm sure that would be the solution from the Denver, hippies in Denver.
And if there's any social distancing problems, those are going to go away after about 7 p.m. if you've got wolf packs running around at night, people are going to buy their business.
Kaplan, you want to go next?
Yeah, I was going to say, we have a friend of ours whose move is to pick up girls at dog runs in Denver. So they would be against it. If wolves come in and clear out all the dog runs, that could be another problem. But
by the way, this guy's name, coincidentally, is Eric Wolf.
Yeah, he's a Patreon subscriber, I believe. So
is
shout
it really?
out. Anyway, yeah, I was going to start with South Dakota, which is, you know, one of those states that, you know, California, Colorado, these are states that influence the nation. And South Dakota, maybe not so much. So people aren't paying attention to their initiatives as much. But yeah,
as South Dakota so goes, doesn't go so the nation. Goes
there
the
haven't
country.
Been any other corn palaces.
The bellwether county.
They have a constitutional amendment B that legalizes sports betting in Deadwood and requires that the local revenue from such activity be dedicated to the historic restoration and preservation of Deadwood.
Like so the TV show?
That's Deadwood? What I was going to ask first.
Oh, that's a place.
There's a place called Deadwood. They don't mean it. That was my first question.
These liberal elites.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've seen that on HBO or whatever it was. Okay. Yeah.
I am 100% in favor of this. Like I'm going to hold back from going into monologue mode, but like if you're going to like, it's gambling, it's your life. You can gamble. That's fine. The state need not intervene to protect you from your own idiocy. It doesn't exist for that purpose. The only thing I find weird about this particular, ballot initiative is that they're limiting it to Deadwood, which doesn't make sense to me. I don't know why they would go, man, they sure can't handle it in Leakey County, man. People would like gamble their lives away. If they go to Broken Elbow to South Dakota, everybody will be poor. But if we do it in Deadwood, good old cosmopolitan Deadwood, we think the people can handle it there. Just do it across the whole state. So I hope, like, if you're in South Dakota, absolutely vote for that initiative and use it as a pilot program to get gambling in your state. Yay, freedom.
Those
yay,
real power. Cities in South Dakota.
Monologue. I love it.
Can I ask?
Love it.
Were those real places, Ian, or you just made those up? I'd have no idea.
I made them up. I've got like a list of like town names I recycle in my mind. Like I also like Gout County is what I bring up a lot. Gout. And Jowls.
Gout County.
Yeah.
Jowls.
I'm in favor of this. As long as all gambling debts are settled by shotgun.
Oh, that's a good one. Yes. Duel.
Like your Second Amendment and your gambling must go together. So that's their linked issues.
I mean, I would think like I have a bookie, like old fashioned. You know, that's how a real man gambles.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they have the organized crime contingent to have bookies in South Dakota. So this is probably providing them a good service.
If anything, if it induces the mafia to move in, it will just make the state more ethnically diverse. I see no downsides to this whatsoever. Now you got an Italian quarter. Good
pasta
for you.
And meatballs. Cap, what are the arguments against this? Are people just like the patronizing kind of like, oh, people don't know what they're doing. Gambling is amoral. Like, is that the main thing?
I think that's always been the argument against gambling. I mean, it's a fascinating thing. Gambling was illegal in most of America for most of our life, other than Las Vegas. And Atlantic City, you could always play, blackjack and cards, but you could never sports gamble. Yeah. And Indian, but casinos, you still couldn't sports bet there. And then all of a sudden, like, you remember about 10 years, you used to bet online when the internet first started. And then Congress passed some weird law. Yeah. Heaton probably remembers this, where they just banned it. They made your credit card companies. You couldn't gamble online. Your credit cards wouldn't work. And then that was like last decade. And this decade, everyone's going broke and they're realizing, oh, a great way to raise money is gambling. So now we have it everywhere. DraftKings, FanDuel, all this.
I think they're realizing that it's a good way to make money and it's incredibly difficult to enforce. And so if you're going to have a dumbass prohibition like gambling, eventually you go, oh, maybe we should just tap into this keg rather than trying to throw it in the
river. Yeah, I mean, New York State, for some reason, I don't know if it's the mob bookies who are paying our governor off or whatever, but for some reason we're not talking about legalizing gambling here and we're like broke. So I think every state should have it. You know, when you're in like New Jersey where they have it, you could be on your phone, you could place bets, and then you go to New York, the same website doesn't work, the same IP. So they can enforce that type of stuff.
Do you need VPNs into Jersey to do sports betting?
You do if you don't have a bookie, yeah. So,
You know, if you go to the UK, they just have gambling. Like, it's not even a big deal. Like for us in America, like as Kaplan pointed out, you know, we all grew up where like outside of Indian casinos, like Vegas was like, whoa, they allow gambling there. And like, you can just have it in a pub and stuff in the UK. Like, and no one, it's kind of boring. Like if they had a city dedicated to gambling, it would be kitschy and weird. Because it turns out most people can handle it.
Andrea, where do you land
like
on this?
Like a weird prohibition law left over. So would the proceeds go to the state or is it like a Native American proposal?
Oh, you think I dug that deep? Where the person?
Yeah, no, right. Okay, fine.
it sounded like you were going to use it to protect historic Deadwood.
Is Deadwood a Native? It says to the historic restoration and preservation of Deadwood, which I find very specific. But that's the way they get people in, I think.
I was just going to say, I just assume the proceeds are going to go to building up the set of the beloved TV show. That is still the only thing I'm picturing when I'm thinking about
doing. I mean, it's...
Oh, so it's film subsidies? Yeah,
I saw my bookie recently. It was good to catch up. His business was hurt like everyone else with the pandemic.
Right.
But you should see the clothes this guy has. My he's his nicest gloves, the nicest shoes. That's where all my money's going to the proceeds of. So it's better to support a historic district in your town.
Yeah, I
support it.
Yeah, no, I'm in full support. As a liberal elite, I love the idea of restoring this movie set to
this town that you didn't know existed
10 years ago. Yeah,
I thought it was done. It was the Old West. I didn't know it really.
Wait,
still
can
is.
I ask both Kaplan and Andrea, what did you think Deadwood, the TV show? Why did you think that name existed?
I didn't know it was a real place. Yeah, I thought it was a fictional, like, Old West place.
It doesn't sound real. It sounds as real as Broken Elbow and Gout and all the rest.
Deadwood, South Dakota.
It's where Buffalo Bill got shot. He got shot at a poker game.
He was a character on the show. It checks out.
Don't you remember episode 4?
Yeah. Andrea and I are the real elites in this crew. You guys are the are the men of the people, Turner and Heaton.
We are the men of the people.
You're the Americans.
That's right. I get that a lot. Good old man of the people,
Heaton. Heaton is representing the people. Yeah.
Yeah, in Oklahoma, I mean.
Heaton, give us one. What do you got?
You knew about Don.
Oh, wait. So right now, so to recap, real quick. We're for the Wolves, I believe. Although, Andrew, we didn't get your opinion on the Wolves.
I'm for it.
I was against it, but I think I was outvoted.
You got outvoted. And then we're all for gambling in Deadwood, of course.
Yep. We're all for gambling. Yeah. Okay. So this one might be divisive. You guys ready for this?
Divide us.
Okay. We're going to go to California, a bastion of brilliant governance. The prop that I'm going to talk about is Prop 16. This repeals Prop 209.
Say no more.
So as of now,
exactly,
209, enough said. So 209 was an amendment to the Constitution of California that happened in the 90s. I'm going to read it. This is presently the law in California because this is the state constitution of California. As present, it reads, the state shall not discriminate against or grant preferential treatment to any individual or group on the basis of race, sex, color, ethnicity, or national origin in the operation of public employment, public education, or public contracting. California Prop 16 wants to repeal that. And so
in the name of the two groups, progress.
In the name of progress, we need it's. I'm going to tip the deck a little bit on how I feel about this. It's the idea of a positive discrimination. We're going to discriminate against people, but in a good way is the idea behind it. The California government, so like Kamala Harris, Gavin Newsom, all the bigwigs, very much in favor of this. The money's been incredible coming in to support Prop 16. I think the CEO of Netflix and several other companies have all chipped in millions and millions of dollars. The opponents to it have raised, so let's say it's like, I think, $13 million in terms of ad buy campaigns in favor of Prop 16 to repeal the discrimination clause of the Constitution. $50,000 has been raised in opposition to this, mostly from Asian student associations. Yet the polling as of now is in favor of not taking out this discrimination clause. So to try and be as even-handed as I can in the description of this, the proponents of Prop 16 say that the state needs to be unfettered in its ability to aid minority groups. And because as of now, the government is forbidden by law to publicly allocate funding or education based along ethnic lines, it is not able to help underperforming minorities as much as it could. The flip side of that is discrimination based on ethnic groups is bad. And it doesn't really matter which ethnic group you're discriminating against. That, like, if you're like, hey, this time, okay, last time we were discriminating against black people, but this time we're promoting black people. The flip side of the coin is we shouldn't have laws that attribute rights or privileges based on skin color. I myself very heavily fall into the latter camp. I do not like this proposition. And I'll further say, I think that it's I read the New York Times editorial. It was not surprisingly very much in favor of this proposition. And they were like, you know, there's not going to be quotas. And I was like, well, like there are in the private sector. California passed a law 2 years ago that requires that all businesses above a certain economic threshold have to have, I think, 2 out of 7 people on the board of directors has to be a minority. So they're already doing it on a private level. It won't happen on an educational level because the Supreme Court clarified in 1978 in, I think it was Bake versus Board of Education, something like that, that you can't use quotas in terms of seating allocation or in terms of admission allocation in universities. You can use affirmative action as like One factor among many is like a tiebreaker, but you can't just go, our class is going to have 20% black people and 80% up for grabs. You're not allowed to do that by federal law. So that won't happen.
I have a question. What's the argument against, they always say that you do this kind of stuff. They always end up doing this stuff based off race. What's the argument against doing it based off of economic standing?
Good question.
That always seems like a more logical move, and it never seems to be done.
No.
But I'm too stupid.
I am also in favor of that position, Turner. I think if your goal is to help people that have had a difficult time, that economic is actually a better way to do it. I think the argument is that that there is systemic racism in the existing structure, and that it needs to be, there needs to be pushback in some capacity and to clear a space for minority people in order to enter the workforce and enter public education. And that this is a way to try and offset historical problems.
So it's like the cops aren't checking someone's bank account numbers before arresting them.
Right.
Just on the street for no reason.
Right.
So,
though I like that idea where we just walk around with that number and then we know how much we should worry about getting shot.
Social credit scores.
We'd all be saving a lot more. I think that would be one thing. Yeah. And I think the other piece of this too, and there is research.
And I would just be done dating forever at that point. That would just be like, nope. Yeah,
your Patreon
I'm out.
Number on there.
Can I paint zeros on it? One of the other arguments too, as far as like leveling or not leveling, but like adjusting for past injustices, is that then once you have more people who are more representative, that tends to draw others into those fields. So when they do research on like women in engineering or black people in finance or whatever, if you turn out you have a bank where there are more black people are likely to stay. So there's this idea of like, maybe you could do a one-time adjustment and that would get further changes down the line. Maybe. I mean, it's one thing to show it in a laboratory. It's another to have this work well.
One of the things I think is really interesting about this proposition is I think that it is emblematic of, weirdly, a very positive phenomenon in America that we don't really talk about, which is that to a great extent, we are fighting about neither of us wants to be racist. And I think you are being racist and I'm going to stop you because I abhor racism so much. So like on my end, like it seems to me that the sort of the two ethical spheres that are operating here is one is sort of outcome based. So it's looking at like what is the percentage of people in higher education, what is the percentage of people in that are getting public contracts that are people of color, and we need to make the law try and adjust that to reflect the general population. I'm going more first principles of just I find it abhorrent to attribute rights and privileges based on skin color. But I am in my mind I am fighting against racism, and I think the people that are in favor of this law are also very much fighting against racism.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And it's a distinction of like what will make racism less prevalent. Is it ignoring race or is it adjusting for racism? And I think we've tried the ignoring race side, like lines like I don't see color and things like that. And I think maybe the reason we're seeing this sort of thing come back, obviously this year race has been on everyone's mind a lot more, is this argument that like you actually can't just ignore it because people's lives are actively worse depending on what race you are. So it's easier. And I also prefer to not see race and not think about someone's race. But given that people of different races are telling me that their lives are different from mine, I feel I can't ignore it, even though I'm totally with you in principle, Heaton, that it would be best if we just didn't think about it when we evaluated people.
Yeah. Well, for the record, I'm not in favor of not thinking about it. And I acknowledge that, very few people are actually colorblind. That is just it never occurs to them. But the hang up that I have is I can't if it's like, hey, we need to adjust the system. Great. I think that makes a lot of sense. And there are certain situations where you can look at the system and you can say the system is disproportionately impacting a minority group or something like that. I think like a lot of criminal justice reform is indicative of that, where we set like crack standards minimum sentencing for crack way higher than we set for cocaine. But it disproportionately affected black people, like that kind of thing. I'm like, absolutely, let's change that. But the problem I have is I fundamentally disagree with giving people rights, privileges, or discriminations based on skin color. And I don't see a way around that with this particular proposition.
And the distinction is like, are we adjusting for the inputs that gave rise to these disparities, or are we adjusting for the outcome of this disparity? And I'm with you that unless you address the underlying systemic sources of these disparities, you're not actually going to solve this. So a comparison, not a very good one for a number of reasons, but a loose comparison is Salesforce addressed the wage gap between male and female employees, and they level set 1 year and they gave everyone the same wages at the same levels. And within a year, they were back to different levels. So it's like you can keep adjusting, but if the underlying system isn't resolved and the underlying cultural expectations about negotiate, whatever, we don't have to get into that, you're just going to be back where you started. So I do think you have a good point there where it's like adjusting it is just as superficial, unless you think of the endogeneity that I was describing before, where having more Black people in positions of leadership gives rise to further more organic arrivals of Black people in positions of leadership. I don't know if that would happen.
I think that would be good. I think diversity is a good thing, and having different viewpoints strengthens any organization. I just don't want to force it by government fiat, because I see that as being too interventionist in private businesses, and likewise the whole rights and privileges based on race.
What if we consistently gave Black gamblers better odds? Would that
in Deadwood?
I'm definitely out on that.
That might be a way around it.
It should be based on your income in that situation. Based on people,
I think I have an opinion on this.
Let's hear your opinion, Turner.
I've developed it over the last 30 seconds. So.
Perfect.
Here we go. I would vote for it. Here's why. Because we always need a state to try something so that we can know in practice if it actually works or not, right? And I grew up in the great state of California. I have very different views on it from Andrew Heaton. I know he hates it. I know he hates all of you listening from there now. Thank you very much. But I grew up there, and we did – there's a lot of things that we tested out in California in the 80s, 90s, whatever, and then it turned out to be the right move. I'm sure there's other things that were the wrong move, but let's go right move. Okay, in 1992, Kaplan and I talked about this recently on our podcast, they outlawed Columbus Day in California.
Not the right move.
Italian I grew listeners. Up not knowing. I thought Columbus Day was a thing of the past, like slavery. I get to New York. Kaplan still celebrates Columbus Day. Everyone does. I'm like, what decade are we in? Turns out they got rid of it. They got rid of smoking indoors when I was a child. I was born in 1982. You weren't allowed to smoke indoors. You go to Pennsylvania. Up until 5 years ago, you could sit there at the diner at a Waffle House and smoke cigarettes. Yeah, so there's things you need to test out someplace. California is always our the incubator state, right? If you're one of these crazy, if you're one of these type of people who likes tests, move to California. You get to try it out first. If it works, we'll all do it. If it doesn't work, big deal. I don't live in California anyway.
But aren't we just testing out something that's already, we're just coding something. They've had affirmative action for our whole lifetime. I mean, in the 90s, I felt like if you would have told me they still had affirmative action in 2020, we would have been surprised. Like, we would have thought that was a huge failure of society. They always felt like it was going away at that point. People were against. So now, isn't the whole point this is just a way, like a loophole, to be allowed to have affirmative? I mean,
well,
I don't
exactly.
It is affirmative action, right?
Back yeah, but we've had it. I mean, they just like people have raised objections to it.
Well, so previously, California was forbidden by its own laws from employing affirmative action in public affairs, which is to say that if you're the state and you're giving out contracts. You're giving it to a road building firm. You couldn't go, we're giving it to this particular road building company because it's Black owned. You would not be allowed to do that. And so now, if you repeal that, you could make economic decisions of allocation of funds. And it would have some effect in schools as well, because at present schools in California by law are not supposed to take race or are not meant to discriminate with race. And so they would be allowed to do that.
I think we'll have a 2-2 tie here because, I'm against this. I just don't like putting it. I like trying to do things to help. But like once you put it in that language, I don't like the language.
I believe in the laboratory of democracy, but California is a meth lab of democracy. Like, there's all these ideas coming out of it that I don't think will work very well. I agree with you, Turner, to a point in that there are certain things that we don't know the consequences of, and those are worth having explored on a state-by-state level. But for me, my objection to this is not the practical outcome. It's that I find the legislation itself racist, and so I can't abide it. And I don't really want people experimenting with what I view as racism.
Turner's a big racist.
But, I digress, though. I think, we've got a bunch of ballot initiatives to get through.
Well, let me just quickly say, though, that I sounded strongly as a yes, and I am a yes, but it's not as strong as I sounded, because I do think that it's problematic, and I don't have a lot of trust that it will be carried out well, and I worry about that, and I don't know the details of if it's, like, for business contracts for government, that's one thing. If it gets into like broader swaths of society, that's another. So I don't have a ton of confidence about it, but I will vote for yes, in part because of Turner's point, and in part because enough non-white people seem to think it's a good idea, and white people have had a better time of things on average. But Turner is also right that, you know, class and finances like a- should matter as well. But I'm open to giving it a try. But I'm not a resounding yes. I just want to be clear on the record.
We need a, so we're, okay, so you're need like a Susan we Collins yes.
Famously popular. It's,
you're yes with some yeah. asterisks and caveats, yeah, but yeah, you're yeah. still voting yes. Okay. So it, looks, it sounds yeah, like we've got a divided
vote,
guys.
We need a fifth justice here.
That's, this is good.
Yeah. Is Amy free? I don't know. Yeah.
All right, so we're split on that one. I'm going next. We're going. We're sticking with California here. This one is, and let me read it specifically what it says, Prop 17, and the – I'm going to read it because it's a few sentences, a couple sentences. This third or fourth sentence is what I'm most interested in. But anyway, Prop 17 restores the right to vote to people convicted of felonies who are on parole, except if you are found mentally incompetent. You cannot vote. I don't have the exact language. I'm looking for it. I can't find the exact language. But basically saying like, and that was almost like an of course. It's like, of course, unless, you know, people found mentally incompetent. My question is, if we're taking out mentally incompetent people from voting in the United States of America,
that's slippery slope.
I mean, like, how does a QAnon person ever win?
Yeah.
You know, I think, isn't there some state in the South or a QAnon, like state senator one or something like that on a QAnon platform?
Oh, I'm sure that happens somewhere.
So
yeah.
Is that mentally incompetent thing? To me, you can't take out mentally incompetent people from voting, or like, do we even have America anymore?
Right, right. Or like, if anyone has ever taken like Prozac or something, as I look at my Prozac prescription, right? Like, if you're even remotely seeing a therapist or download Talkspace or something.
Well, who decides? Yeah, who decides who's mentally incompetent?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I think based on what you're saying, Turner, I think I agree with your concern there. I think I would vote yes on this one. In that, in general, I am in favor of moving towards giving felons the right to vote. I think now this is a little bit of a gray area for me because they're on parole. They haven't actually served their time. For sure, when you've served your time, when you're out of prison, I think you should absolutely, like, that's it. Like, you're not a citizen with an asterisk. You're back to, like, all things are go. And I think we really, really hamstring people that are coming out of the carceral system in this country. And I would love for them to have the opportunity to influence politics because they've seen prison from the inside. And I think it's pretty terrible based on everything that I've seen. I might even be in favor of just never taking the right to vote away. I think I'd be all right with felons
voting.
Wait,
this is like, for the while they're in jail?
We have the largest prison population on Earth.
Really?
Yeah, I think I would. We've got the largest prison population on Earth. We've got the second highest incarceration rate of any country on Earth. You look at like Oklahoma, where I'm from, which has the most amount of prisoners, like, and they're mostly there for drugs. Like, it's mostly nonviolent. It's like people have gone on meth and things like that. Like Oklahoma would probably be purple if you let felons vote. And it's not my goal to like push it Democrat or push it Republican, but rather just like I think that we are really, really overdoing putting people in prison. And I would rather give those people that are currently in prison for bad reasons, in my opinion, the right and ability to interact with that
Trump
system.
Will make it legal if he thinks they'll all vote for him. He'll be like, I'll give everybody the right to vote in all the prison. That's a lot of population. That's a huge swing.
There's like a lot of Trump tattoos that are circulating around.
Let me just say, wait, let me jump in here because I did read it slightly incorrectly.
Oh, boy.
So
that's a totally different thing.
I finally found it again. I lost it in the middle of reading it. No. It's basically the same. You restore the right. It's restoring the rights of people who are on parole. And also restoring the rights of people who are mentally incompetent.
Oh.
Oh.
So how can you lose it for being mentally incompetent? I didn't
Let
even know that.
Was... Currently, people are disqualified in California if they are in prison or on parole and or found mentally incompetent. So this would re-qualify all of those people.
Is the mentally incompetent thing in the eyes of the state like maybe a Britney Spears where it's like you have to have a caregiver who is in charge of your estate? Like, is it that high a level?
Britney Spears is mentally...
Well, I think she's like her father controls her life. Doesn't matter why I know this.
And he doesn't let her vote.
Yeah. And he doesn't let her vote.
So. I don't know if she votes.
She's like 45 now.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's also a possibility I don't know the history of striking mentally incompetent people from the voter rolls in California. possibly horrible, but it's also possible that it's meant to be a like a defensive measure against voter fraud, because you could have situations where like somebody goes into an insane asylum and just passes ballots out, right, or something. Like I have no idea.
In other countries,
might have been something like that.
Anybody know this? Do kid felons vote? I don't know.
They don't have voting in most countries.
Yeah, exactly. In some countries,
don't have felons.
Felons who vote, really.
I'm just going to say, I think they should be allowed to vote when they paroled, because they've lived, as Heen just mentioned, you've been in prison, you know so much about the system, you know what changes should be made, you should have a voice. On the flip side, though, these like kids who never leave their family home, who live at home still after college, they should not be allowed to vote until you get out and at least pay rent somewhere or get a job. Take all their votes away. I that's the trade-off right there.
Yeah, if you're 30 years old and people are like, hey, can you drive me? You're like, I don't have a driver's license. How do you get around? My mom takes me.
Yeah, no voting.
No voting.
You don't have you don't have a stake in this thing. You have no idea what life is like. There's my solution. Yeah. I don't even.
There's another ballot initiative in California this year that would give 17-year-olds the ability to vote in primaries if they are going to be 18 by the time of the general election. So at first I thought this was sneaky, because this a lot of voting jurisdictions will, like, if there is a left-leaning bloc in power, will go like, let 15-year-olds vote, like, because teenagers tend to vote Democrat, right? So like in Scotland, when they were doing the Scottish referendum, they were like, we should really let everybody that's 14 and up vote, because they knew that like the 14-year-olds all wanted to do it. So I thought it might be that, but then I looked into it, and basically they're saying, if you were going to be eligible to vote in the general election, then we were going to allow you to vote in the primaries so that you can influence that. And I was like, well, that makes sense.
But Hawaii has gone to 16. Am I jumping ahead? Is anyone going to do that later?
No.
Okay, snake draft. You go ahead.
Hawaii.
Are we all in favor of giving parole people the right to vote?
I'm in favor of giving mentally incompetent people to vote. So therefore, I'm also a yes.
But I want to add an addendum about the millennial or the Zoomers who live at home.
Gen Z, the millennials out of this. And I also second Heaton's, if you're in jail, I think you should vote too. I like that. Especially if you're crazy. If you're insane and you're in jail, you get two votes.
If you make it at good license plates, you have to make like a certain number. You have to hit your quota for the week. Then we let you vote.
I think that's slavery, but whatever. Yeah.
We'll get to that later.
Which we'll get to in a minute, because that's going to be
Heaton's already made his stance clear on slavery. So let's continue. Should we go back to Andrea? Andrea.
All right. So my next one has less wildlife, I'm sorry to say, but it's something I am very interested in. So this is Massachusetts question two. I guess they get questions, not propositions. It's a very inquiring state. Good for them.
They're
that's
a very
right. The others
curious
are like,
state. Or Commonwealth. I can't
propose,
remember which one they are.
Insist.
Are they Commonwealth?
I think they're Commonwealth. All right. So question two. Question two would enact ranked choice voting for primary and general elections. Easy.
Yeah.
Primary and general elections for state executive officials, state legislators, federal congressional representatives, and certain county offices. As of 2020, statewide elections in Massachusetts use plurality voting system, which is one person, one vote. And that's what most of us have in the U.S. So this is just for, I thought it was also presidential, but it's not. It's just for state executives, state legislators, and federal representatives to Congress, ranked choice voting. Now, I am for it because ranked choice voting is mathematically superior to what we have, but I don't love it because approval voting is much more robust and more reliable than ranked choice voting, which can lead to screwy outcomes mathematically. So
I'm
would
so confused.
Support approval voting. So ranked choice voting, you go
what's
in.
Approval voting?
Can I pick that apart? Well, first of all, Andrea, thank you for bringing this back. Like, I feel like you're flirting with me.
Yes.
Bringing up ranked choice voting. I read this email and I was like,
that's
wolves
right.
at ranked choice voting.
That's
Andrea
right.
knocked us out of the park. I am also emphatically in favor of ranked choice voting, or I should say electoral reform in general, moving away from plurality voting. As I recall, based on when you deigned to come on my program, Andrea, I believe approval voting is, or so ranked choice voting, you just number the candidates in order of preference. So I'm going to go Howie Hawkins, Joe Biden, Donald Trump, whatever, right? Whereas approval voting is just the ones you're okay with. You're like, I'm okay with these three
X's
people. Those two people suck.
Can I ask a question here?
Yes.
In ranked choice voting, are you assigning a number of points? Like first place gets 3 points, second place gets 2 points, third place gets one, and then they add up the amount of points that person got? Is that
not
basically the system?
Quite. It's added up like sort of in the reverse. So I would go in and go like 1, 2, 3, 4, and you would say, okay, who got the most ones? And if there was a clear majority of like half the Americans said everyone was number one, the same person, then it would just be that. But then if not, then you go to twos and erase the ones and say how many people got number two, and then you allocate those points. And so it keeps going that way.
What's
really
voting
good
general.
About it yeah. is you end up with candidates. You can end up in candidates if you like simulate it that are like everyone's second choice, which feels like a really great way to go, especially if you have more than two candidates. If you only have two candidates, it actually kind of doesn't matter.
Could Gary Johnson have won 4 years ago if we did this? No.
He probably wouldn't have won, but he probably would have got more than 5%. Because if we'd had a ranked choice voting thing, I mean, like I think anybody that is outside of the parties that has any type of clout, like let's say if ranked choice voting existed, presumably Bernie Sanders would be running on the Democratic Socialist ticket of America. He wouldn't be running as a Democrat, and he wouldn't be able to spoil the election either. So like in the primaries, people would go, oh, I really like Bernie Sanders, but I'm going to vote for Joe Biden because he seems like a safer choice. If you have ranked choice voting, you don't have to worry about that, because if Bernie Sanders ends up not being in the top rung, that vote just goes away and your vote defaults to Biden. So Johnson would have done far better. And I think any ideologue outside of the two-party system would do far better.
And another way to think about this is it's a way of getting – I mean, voting is a chance for us to share our opinions and say what we care about. And it's a way to communicate more information about what you know and what you want, right? And so if I could go Biden 1, Sanders 2, et cetera, et cetera, it's a way of expressing myself more. So there's these ideas of voter engagement might go up because I – I'm not forced to go in and vote for just the one that I want to win or whatever.
Oh, right.
But truly, I do think, I know I talk about it a lot, but approval voting gets us a lot of the benefits of ranked choice voting. And it saves us from a couple of these mathematical problems with ranked choice voting, where you can have cycling preferences, where the group prefers A to B to C to A to B to C to A, and that's not good. And there's also a few strange, and I'm not good enough at math to say, but a few strange scenarios where voting for someone higher could actually mess them up, because then they wouldn't be counted lower. And in the long run, you could hurt your candidate by ranking them higher. It's unlikely, but it could happen with ranked choice voting.
Okay.
And so as ranked choice voting is spreading, I don't understand why we're not just doing approval instead. It's also a lot easier. Go in and mark the ones you like, because you also have to have a lot of information to be able to rank a whole bunch of candidates, especially for races.
Can you just slow down for a second and explain?
Yeah, we have.
Kaplan and I understand this.
We don't really fit in the world's smartest
podcast. Wait, let me say this, Cap. Kaplan and I understand this, but for our audience, who might not understand all of those words in whatever, I don't know what language that was you were just speaking.
Political science language.
Yeah.
I did major in political science. I might.
Yeah,
I should
seriously. Right. University of Miami.
University of Miami. Yes. Sunshine U. Yeah. Please. Yeah, I don't know any of those, anything you were just talking about.
Okay.
I've never heard of approval.
What is ranked choice voting?
Ranked choice, I get. That part I get.
Right.
So
ranked choice voting
is that the first
is,
one. No, what was the first one?
You go in and you rank your choice.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. What was the second one?
Approval voting is you go in and just vote for whichever ones you're fine with. So, for example, it's more valuable in primaries, as Heaton was saying.
Well, like you can vote for everyone but Trump, basically, if you say you don't like Trump.
Exactly.
Oh.
Exactly.
Everyone but Howie Hawkins, if you think he's too, I guess.
Right.
You're like, I'll be okay with this. It's like if you're doing food as a family and you're like, you mark up the things you'll share. I'm willing to eat that. I don't love chicken and garlic sauce, but I'd eat it if I had. Yeah.
Right. And that's where, you end up with everyone. You could end up with everyone's like second favorite, which, again, in a primary could sound pretty okay. And then avoid some of these problems where you're like, oh, I should vote for Biden or I should vote.
Second
for
Trump. Favorite, got Trump in that scenario. Mm-hmm.
Second favorite, but
2016 when the others split the vote and it goes to Trump, right? Like it would probably help with that sort of thing.
The Republican primary.
Yeah, but both systems would basically be prohibitive to a spoiler candidate. There might be some weird mathematical way to do it, or to like sort of force the election rhetoric to go a particular direction. But you could not waste your vote or spoil the election in either of the systems that Andrea has described. I think you're right, Andrea, as well, that I think that would really increase voter turnout. So like with Ross Perot back in 92, when they did the exit polls, even though we sort of historically view Perot as having like spoiled the election and giving it to Clinton, in the exit polls, like 80% of the people that voted for Perot when asked, would you have voted for Bush or Clinton if Perot hadn't been in, said, I wouldn't have voted. Like they were and generally third party candidates tap that, yeah. but there's always that fear. And if you rank choice voting or
one
approval voting, that goes
away. One of the worst heckles I ever got was when I was presenting on voting systems at a conference. And I was talking about the spoiler effect, and I was talking about the 2000 election where many people think that Nader offered a spoiler effect on Gore. And someone in the front row just screamed at me. And apparently there's a whole contingency, and perhaps they have a point. I don't know it well enough. That actually, same as you were describing, Heaton, that if you look at the exit polls and you think about where the turnout was or would have been, that actually Nader didn't spoil the election for Gore. So there's a very outspoken contingency that is still mad about blaming Nader for spoilers.
I don't know about the exit polls specifically because it's Florida, the state that matters, right? But I'd say generally that tends to be the case. I think like we have an idea of like looking at a pie chart of the American electorate and going, oh, like, you know, 40% of the people voted for Democrat, 40% voted for Republican, and 20%, or actually more like 6%, voted third party. And that's not the actual pie chart. The actual pie chart is 40% of people just don't vote.
True.
I don't care is the second largest or the third largest winner in every single election.
I don't care if you win the election in this scenario.
If we start mandating voting, they don't care. Probably would win.
All right, so let's pick some.
Who's voting for this?
We got to keep moving.
Yeah. Wait, so are we all in favor of this? This is my campaign. I'm just saying for everyone.
I'm a neon yes. I think Andrea is
I'm in favor of whatever they were doing when they were running around those high school gyms in Iowa a few months ago. That's what I was in favor of. That was great. That was fun. It was good TV, you know?
I'm in favor of this, and I will say one thing. Ralph Nader did not cost Gore Florida. It was my grandma Faye and her entire retirement community who all accidentally voted for Pat Buchanan. In that
all right, let's keep
ballot.
Moving.
Yeah, Kaplan, you're next. I got one more. I'm going to bring us to the great state of
Utah.
Yeah, the great state of Utah, where they have a constitutional amendment number C. It's not the First Amendment they list. The First Amendment is to become a more gender neutral state. But the third amendment is to repeal a constitutional exception on the ban of slavery that allowed for slavery and involuntary servitude as punishment for a crime. So apparently in Utah, when they wrote the state constitution, they copied the language from, is it our 13th Amendment, the one that banned slavery? Whichever one banned slavery. They copied that language, but they threw in this little except in the cases of a crime, like a little loop, like if the Seinfeld episode where the butler...
Well, and I should say that's in the Constitution too. The Constitution prohibits involuntary servitude except when part of a prison sentence.
Well,
it's actually in
prisoners
there.
Have to do stuff. And that's,
make your license plates, Captain. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, so basically, in Utah, they've decided a bunch of religious leaders and civil rights leaders have decided that in Utah, it kind of leaves open the interpretation that slavery is okay. I guess they're because most Mormons don't go to jail. They don't know this is a thing that happens in prison. They're not experienced with life in the inside. So they look at their state constitution. Everyone reads their own state constitutions all the time.
Yeah.
And they read it, and then they have trouble explaining to their kids why slavery is illegal if someone gets a speeding ticket or something. So they're gonna write this wrong. I don't know if anybody wants to make the case because we have some contrarians among us. For slavery. In some situations, is anybody?
Well, I have a question. Is this just the prison situation? Like they want to make it so you can't force people to do indentured servitude and slavery while they're in prison? Because isn't that how all prisons work? I'm not saying it's the right thing, but isn't that how it works everywhere?
I believe so.
Yes, that is the standard procedure. I think you're correct, Andrea. And there's actually I'm glad you brought this up, Kaplan, because I was going to bring up Nebraska Prop 1, which is basically the same. Nebraska Prop 1 would prohibit involuntary servitude in the carceral system. I am very much in favor of this.
In the prison system.
So
you can't be forced to make things.
System,
but Utah's, I was reading an article about it, they don't mention the prison system at all. They're just talking about
Oh, really?
This is just more of a symbolic gesture that, like, we actually have a state where technically slavery is legal in some cases, and we don't want that to,
I think that would have court ramifications, though, because if they're using the phrase involuntary servitude or labor, and they mention even in prison or something like that, then that would mean if you're a warden and you go, hey, we're forming a chain gang, we're all going to go work on the bison farm. They go, no, we're not going to do that, right? So like that would have a legal effect on the labor that could happen.
It says here it's about as part of a criminal punishment. I think it is part of
I think he said they're trying to change it to say, except as punishment for a crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted. So they have to add, maybe that's what they wanted. They're going to add, like, change it to say, as of duly convicted. They're going to put that in, I guess. Or
this is the least sympathetic question I'll ever ask, I hope. What would prisoners do in jail if not make license plates?
Beach volleyball.
Like, get educated and stuff?
So allow me to go.
Oz. Have you ever seen an episode of Oz?
I've been like the cranky libertarian this episode. Allow me to go like full-fledged Norwegian progressive at this point. The point of the prison system should be to protect people outside of it and rehabilitate the people in it. That should be the point of it. It shouldn't be to punish people. I, as a taxpayer, don't want to spend more money to like have somebody gang raped and messed up so that when they leave, they're a broken human being that's going to go right back into crime. That does no good to me. It does no good to society. Our prison system is awful. In particular, the servitude here that we're talking about, the labor, like it's not like a judge even rules that. Of like a judge says, you are sentenced to working in a chain gang for a year. This is the discretion of the prison, of the warden. They, like in the South, they still like work on plantations. Prisons all over the country outsource their labor to businesses and corporations because they only have to pay the prisoners 20 cents an hour by law, and the prison can then rake in the proceeds from that. I think there's all sorts of really bad incentives in that system. It's rife for abuse. Great example of that, if you've ever seen Shawshank Redemption, where the warden's getting kickbacks to send his chain gang out to help on people's local farms. That happens, or it certainly could happen. And in any case, I think that like our system is this dumb, old school, like Old Testament puritanical system of the point of prison is to punish evildoers. And as a result of that, we dehumanize everybody in it. The people in it aren't fully whole and able to reintegrate into society. And it ends up being more violent and more expensive. And so I would love to shift it to like actually trying to help them get them, like focus on getting GEDs. Focus on work programs that are preparing them for when they leave, and like have therapists on call. The amount of people in prison that are there because they have mental health issues is astonishing. It's like anywhere from 20% to 40%. The largest mental health provider in the state of Oklahoma is the prison system. And these people are being absolutely left out. And I would love to.
I agree with everything you just said, but I do think if you commit really heinous crimes, you should be able to be sentenced to be like an intern for a podcast. Turner does so much work editing our podcast every week.
How many murders is it?
We need, you know, like a butler in the Seinfeld episode. We need an indentured servant, podcast servant, you want to call it, whatever you want to call it.
Agree with Kaplan. And
as long as it's not racially motivated.
We have like 5 minutes left. I think we should do this in about an hour. So let's do one more and then we're out. Yeah. Should I go or Heaton, you want to go? This is coming out of Arizona. This is our last proposition of the day. Everyone, put this into your brains. Go do exactly what we say. Let's see. Here it is. Okay. They want to increase the tax on incomes exceeding $250,000 for teachers' salaries and schools. So I don't know any teachers that make over $250,000, but I'm happy that they're increasing those.
Wait, hold on. Are they taxing the? It sounds like they're taxing the general population of the state of Arizona. revenues going to teachers, not taxing.
We're
going to
do a special teachers, this fat cat teacher tax.
I was like,
yeah, man, I should have been a history teacher in Arizona if they're pulling $200K.
That's seriously what I thought. I'm sorry, I'm having a coffin fit over here.
Turner's reading.
Seriously what I thought. I was like, wow, this is the most useless proposition in the history of man.
Can I ask a general question? Why do they?
There's just some guy in the state legislature going through a divorce with a science teacher who's like, okay, I know how I could get her. I'm going to get this provision put into the state.
Why did they decide to do some things by amendment and some things by, like, they couldn't just pass this in their state? Like, they can't get it done, this tax increase, so they want to make the people pick it, and maybe some
I don't
state...
know how that all works.
I tried to learn not too long ago, like, why sometimes it's like a referendum and a popular vote, and other times it's not, and the answer is I have no idea.
It varies dramatically from state to state. So states that are, like Oklahoma was founded by populists, and as a result, the initial framework for the state government was extremely skeptical of like politicians and bankers, to the point that the Oklahoma state constitution literally clarifies the temperature at which kerosene ignites because they wanted to make sure that that was protected by law in case some banker came in and like adjusted insurance claims or whatever. But as a result of all of that, referendums are very easy to do in that state because they wanted the people to have the ability to enact law outside of the elite legislators that would otherwise be doing it. That happens sometimes. Sometimes there's a state provision in a state constitution which determines the manner in which taxes can be achieved. Like in California, you need, I think, a simple majority to increase spending, but you need like a super majority to raise taxes. So there's a structural element, and then there are other states where it might require a referendum. My guess, though, is knowing nothing about Arizona internal governance, my guess is that they couldn't get it done in the legislature, and so a referendum happened on a ground level.
But they really framed it. They phrased it in a way where it's hard to see it not passing. Because if you say like raising taxes, no one likes being like, oh, to pay for the teachers, then it's all of a sudden.
Folks, I just want to say that is why this is the world's smartest podcast network.
Yeah,
because we have people who can answer any question on face on the.
We don't know if he's right, but he sounded right. So
he sounded great, guys.
I'm just noticing that all of ours, except for Massachusetts, I think, were from Western states, and I know we picked ones that sort of spoke to us. But I'm actually curious to go.
We
back
don't do
and
it on the East Coast.
More. Because, it could be a West Coast thing. And as Heaton was describing, it is different in different states. And I'm wondering if just maybe it's historically as those states formed or were settled, that's what the thinking was or why it is if there is a regional disparity.
Yeah. Well, in New York, we banned slavery.
It could well be. It wouldn't surprise me at all.
But I don't see them on the East Coast nearly as much, if at all. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you also have strong governors and weak governors. Governors are not all equal in power. Some states have very powerful governors. Some governors really don't have very much power beyond appointing things.
Governor Cuomo is not going to allow anything to go to a referendum. Let's leave it at that. He wants to make the decisions.
Not a man where
no, we have
yes,
we have too. Nothing on our ballot in New York.
Well, it sounds like what New York did was do referendums, but do them away from the election in order to not have that many people vote for them, is my guess. If I don't know if this is Democrat or Republican, but if you're like, oh, man, I think we can motivate our guys to vote for this, but we don't want anybody to just come in and happen to vote against it because they're in favor of Trump or in favor of Biden. So let's do it on like a Tuesday in October, the year before the election. And then we'll be able to push it through. One of the other things, too,
that I think has been done, but I don't know exactly, is you can put a referendum on the ballot to get bigger turnout for the other party. So I'm thinking of, I think it was Prop 8 in 2008 or 4 or something like that in California that was against gay marriage. And it got a huge turnout. And the thinking was that it also made a swell of support for other Republican candidates because people were so worked up about the Protection of Marriage Act or whatever it was called.
George W. Bush did that when he was running against John Kerry. Bush was pushing an amendment to the Constitution defining marriages between a man and a woman, which was never going to happen. But it was just that way you could really get the conservatives fired up and
if you're in a state, you can get enough votes to put something like that or something like that to drum up other participation. Yeah.
Well, guys, I think we should wrap this up. Let's just to review, we are in favor of wolves in Colorado, specifically Denver. We're in favor of gambling. We're in favor of whatever Eurozone they're creating in Massachusetts, whatever that thing was.
rank
voting, whatever that means. We were in favor
of the common Massachusetts currency. That's good.
Teachers making over $250K being taxed.
We were against slavery.
We're against slavery. Except Kaplan. Weren't you in favor of it?
Oh, yeah, I was. I dissented, yes.
Yeah. Kaplan.
I'm on an island here.
And that's all I remember.
We're tied on affirmative action. That was the last one.
We're divided.
We're split on affirmative action, and I am going to recuse myself from voting on the Arizona initiative because I don't know enough about Arizona education policy to say whether that's right or not.
Tax the teachers.
Yes. Tax the teachers.
They get summers off. These people, they complain about everything.
They're doing everything on Zoom these days. It's ridiculous.
All right. So that's it, guys. World's Smartest Podcast Network. Everyone go to our website. It's up now. We will be all linked together on iTunes very soon. Maybe even now as you're listening to this, worldsmartestpodcastnetwork.com. You can listen to all of us. You can subscribe to all of our podcasts. That's it, everybody.
Yeah, happy election.
Well, hold on. Right before we leave, though, can everybody go around and say what their podcast is?
Oh, yeah.
So we can send people over? So you guys review cars. and Andrea is like a gardening show, right?
We are lost
Mufflers.
In America.
Muffler men.
No. Kaplan, you're stepping on my promotion of our podcast.
Go ahead.
By getting your dumb muffler joke in.
He said the car thing. Go on.
We are the Lost in America podcast. We talk to comedians around the world about the global news events happening in their country. So what happens is, because America is so inundated with American politics and Trump and everything, we get headlines from news going on in other countries. And then that's about all we get. So Kaplan and I will read a headline. We'll go, we want to learn more about that. We'll find a comedian who lives in that country. Usually they're some popular comedian. They'll spend an hour explaining that whole story to us. Examples being last week, we talked about Poland. We had on a Polish comedian who explained there's a whole far right wing government going on in Poland right now. They outlawed abortions. They have anti-LGBT zones. About a third of the country doesn't welcome LGBT people into their neighborhoods or whatever. So he explained all that to us, how they got there, what happened. All right, go ahead. That's us, lostinamericapod.com.
Yeah. Poland episode's great. I am the host of Ask a Political Scientist, which is a show about how amazing political science is, and I hope that everyone starts following and reading political science research. Every week I bring on a political scientist to have a conversation with me about their research, and I bring on a comedian and or person who's like an expert practitioner. So I did a show about the media, and I brought on a journalist to join to talk about some of the deep science behind the crap we see in the world. So this week's episode is about the research on what actually motivates people to vote and why we do it. And then we had someone come on to talk about how you can motivate people to vote if you want to.
And I host The Political Orphanage, which is a policy and comedy podcast. So on Wednesdays, I bring on thinky people. I bring on a lot of experts and I bring on a lot of authors and I talk to them about big ideas that are in the world of politics. I do it from a nonpartisan perspective. The show is designed for people that don't really feel super catered to by the big two parties, but are still friends with people they disagree with. So here a couple weeks ago, I did Judge Week, and I brought on a bunch of different legal experts to describe, like, this is how jurisprudence works. This is the actual fight happening in the court system. It's not just conservatives versus Republic or conservatives versus progressives. It's actually originalism versus living constitution. The week before the election, depending on when this episode comes out, I spoke to the minor party candidates just to see what they were about and get their perspectives. So I talked to the Constitution Party, the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, and the Alliance Party. And then on Fridays, I completely drop all of that nonsense and I just kick around funny headlines with comedians. Everybody here has been on the show before and will hopefully come back on because I really enjoy joking around with you. So Fridays are just a cathartic release for all of the pent-up frustration we have.
And thank
from
you,
politics.
Everyone. Everyone from all three of our shows for supporting all the other shows. I know all of our numbers are going up because all you guys are subscribing to other people's podcasts, supporting them, reviewing them on iTunes, leaving comments, all that kind of stuff. So thank you, everybody. Heaton,
yeah,
you said you want to continue this conversation somewhere else. What are we doing?
Well, you know, I don't think we'll have time.
He's
I've got
done,
a meeting
he's
at 11:30.
That's it. All right.
He's yeah. got another meeting.
I'm done. I'm tapped out.
And as a reminder,
we have like 600 more propositions to talk about.
Yeah.
So
as a reminder, we do.
Yeah, I really have strong thoughts on Velcro tariffs and the great.
All right.
Area.
We will be back next month with this roundtable. We're doing this roundtable once a month. And that's it, everybody.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.